20 years ago, I was finishing my degree at Western Washington University in Bellingham. And I had been studying education, and I'd gotten a little bit disheartened because I was looking at what people were doing and what I was having to do as a student teacher, and it was a lot of paperwork. We were checking off skills that we were supposed to be learning, and we were writing up these big, long lessons plans that didn't look any fun to teach, any more fun than they were to write. And the people who were teaching me to do these things didn't look very excited about teaching them to me either. And at one point, I took a class on special education, and the teacher gave us an assignment that I really liked. She said, you know, pick a project that has to do with special education and do that. So I picked a project. I picked service dogs. Service dogs are like seeing eye dogs and dogs that help people with diabetes and people who can tell when you're going to have seizures. And I thought, this is great. I've always wanted to help people, and I just absolutely love animals. So this is what I want to do. I want to train dogs. Forget this teaching business with all the paperwork. I just want to train dogs. So I thought, well, I could just quit my degree, but I'm really close. My parents have paid a lot of money, so I just finished up. I had a lot of credits. I'd studied German for a long time, so I finished up with a major in German and a minor in teaching English as a second language, came with a little certificate. And I ran out to try to find a place where I could get experience with dogs. And the closest, easiest place was the animal shelter that was, you know, a little ways down the road. So I started volunteering. Then I got a job, and my first job was really great. It was cleaning the kennels. I would get there first thing in the morning at 5:30. And, you know, you scoop the poop, and then you hose out the whatever else is in there that you don't want to be in there, which was a lot. And you'd have to move the dogs around. You know, you couldn't just hose where the dogs were. And some of the kennels had, like, two sections, and there was, like, a little guillotine door that a dog could go through. So you'd get the dogs to go through so that you could clean one side. But the dogs in the very back, in the isolation, they didn't have that little guillotine set up. They had to go in the outside yard. And in the outside yard, one day, there were pigs, because apparently some pigs had fallen off of a truck. And so, yeah. So we impounded them. You know, we're the Humane Society, so we're not going to sell them for bacon. We're looking for a home for these 300-pound pigs. So every morning I'm going out there, and I'm trying, you know, I want to put my dogs outside so I can clean where they are, but I can't because there's these pigs there. And one day, you know, like I said, it's kind of smelly, and I didn't really mind if the doors were open. So I let the big door be open, and I shut the screen door. And I learned that pigs can break through the bottom of the screen door. And I also learned that pigs can be really angry, because this pig started, this one particular pig, not all of them came after me, but one came after me. And so I was running down the kennel in my big boots, you know, like the rubber boots I had on. And as I'm doing this, the dogs are going absolutely insane. You can imagine the noise. They're really jumping and barking. And one of them flips open his kennel and runs out in front of me like, "Oh, isn't this great? There's a pig after us." So I grab the pig. I pull the pig into the kennel, shut the door behind me. I'm good. I'm safe from the pig, but I really don't want to wait until the people arrive like 2 hours later or whatever. So I went out. I went through the guillotine, came out the other side where the pig wasn't, ran around back to where the pig was supposed to be, and I got him to chase me that direction. He went out, and I shut the door. And I'm feeling like, this is okay. This job is kind of interesting. Look at me, right? So, you know, I keep working there, but as time goes on, I start to see more and more of the darker side of the animal shelter. And I don't honestly even remember how I got involved in euthanasia, but it was a part of the job, and it was something that had to be done, and so I got involved in that too. And as time went on, it was really difficult, and people would come to me, they would come into the shelter and they say, "I don't know how you do this job. You know, it's amazing that you can do this really hard job." And at the time I was thinking, yeah, it's hard, but I know I'm helping these animals the best I can. Even when they get to the very end, I know I'm doing something really good that needs to be done. And if you can't do it, and you can't do it, and you can't do it, then somebody's got to do it, so here I am. And one day, after I had moved up even further, I was a supervisor, one of the technicians that was working under me greeted a woman who came in. This woman was a foster mom. She had, foster for animals. She had fostered these kittens. So, the kittens come in like about 2 weeks old and they can't be adopted out. So when she had fostered these kittens, that meant that she kept them for a month or 2 months, usually about 2 months before they were old enough to be, adopted out from the shelter. And this woman brought these kittens in, and the technician looked at the kittens and said, "Oh, you know what? Those kittens have guck in their eyes. And, goopy eyes means we euthanize." And the woman who brought the kittens in just like, "What? You're going to euthanize my beautiful kittens?" And it was this big incident in the shelter, and the woman went to the director, and it was all this trauma. And, I can't see your faces, but I can feel in the room, you're all like, "Oh my gosh, you're going to euthanize these kittens." But this really was, where we were at here at the shelter. You had to pick which ones could stay and which ones had to go because you only had so much space, and people keep bringing in more animals, and what are you going to do? And the thing that this technician, the line that she had really crossed was that she didn't see that other people didn't see the world like we had to when we were working there. But things got worse for me. I mean, I got more and more depressed from the situation that I was in. And I was making $6 an hour for this grand job, even when I became a supervisor, because just like Megan, I was working more hours, so it didn't matter that they paid me a little bit more money. It was really not very much. And I started having to see a therapist, and the therapist was trying to teach me how to meditate, but I couldn't even wrap my head around meditating. And I would get on the freeway, and I was at the top of I-5 up there, and I just imagined, what if I just stayed on this freeway and kept driving all the way to Mexico or something? And then one day, I talked to my family. My family still lived down here in Puyallup, Tacoma, Lake Taps, actually. And I said, this week was really hard. We had to put to sleep 70 animals. And my parents were like, "What? This job is not okay for you." And they got in the car with my sister, and they drove all the way up to Bellingham, and they set me down in the Colophon Cafe up in Fairhaven, and they said, "You have to quit. This is not okay." And I looked at them, who's going to do it? Everybody says they won't do it. And they said, "We don't care. This is not okay. You have to quit." So I said, "Well, I have to at least give 2 weeks' notice." And my dad says, "No, you don't. Whoever told you had to do something like that?" And he told me you had to do things like that. And so something about him saying, "No, you don't. You could just quit now," kind of shook me. Because if dad thought it was that bad, then it must have been bad. So I did. I quit. I went back to my teacher, one of my teachers from Western, and she was working at Skagit Community College at that point, and she got me a job teaching people who speak English as a second language, which was that little certificate that I got. And right before the Japanese students came that we were going to work with, we were sitting together as a team, the new teachers that I had just met. And they were trying to figure out, what are we going to do with these students when they come? We have to take them to all these different places in the area. We have this really big problem. Are we going to take the van or the bus? And I'm looking at them. I'm sitting at the table like, kind of trying to check my reality. I'm like, this is a problem? We're going to take the van or the bus? This is not a problem. Nobody's going to die. Nobody's losing their animal. Nobody's losing their job. And in, 20 plus years since that I've been teaching, most of the problems have felt this way to me. They're just not that big. And my dad was right. It's okay to quit. Sometimes it's okay to quit.